Well, welcome to another edition of My Life in Football, of course, season four. And as you can see to my left, a good friend of in on the show and one of the best commentators, let me tell you, on non-league football, Stephen
Yeah.
Massey. How are you, sir?
I'm all right there. Thank you very much. Nice introduction. I would say I'm quirky and unique. I don't even, honestly, I get embarrassed and I hear myself with the commentaries and think, oh, really? Oh, but it's people seem to just like it. Like yourself, it's you're unique, it's quirky. So yeah, people seem to enjoy it.
I mean, I'll be honest, I listen to them and I think they're fantastic. I'll be honest with you. I think it's just brilliant, the way you come across on the games and stuff. And it's great. I mean, I was watching a game the other day and I'm not sure if it was your game, but it was Westbury United, I think, were playing and they were at home. And it's the first time I'd seen their pitch. And I don't know if you'd been there so far this season, but I was surprised the hill, and that's the only way I could describe it, in their goal mouth. It was incredible.
It was Benton Heath is a bit like that, where there's a mound, and in fact, if you stood up and reached up to the bat, it's one end is lower than the other because of the mound in there. But Westbury, they've moved over to Frome now, though, haven't they? Playing all their games there at Frome.
I mean, I know. I saw. I think the only time I've ever seen one like that was when I used to go with my dad. I think it's because it was how small I was. But when I used to go with my dad to go and see Leighton Orient, and their goal mouth always used to have a dome on them as well. Around that sort of 6 yard box, used to have a nice dome on it either end. Not anymore, but they used to have it. They used to have it there. But Steve, I mean, tell us. I mean, how we start the conversation off the same sort of way. I mean, how are you, and how's things at Helston? We'll come back to Helston, of course, at the end. But as well, I mean, how's things?
We've the last well since mid-November, it's been quite tough. We didn't realize in mid-November when we lost our first game, and we were the last Southern League side to actually lose a game in the league. And since then, I think we've won once, twice, and then, I would say the wheels have come off. But it's just, I know, and it's I'm not making excuses, but it's not it's the break of the ball has just not gone for us. We've had injuries, which we haven't had over the last 3 years. The squad's been together this particular squad for the last three even some 4 seasons here, and we haven't had a sort of injury crisis like we've had. And to be fair, we'd shot ourselves in the foot with our discipline. It was really poor. It's been really, really poor. And we've had our big player, Aaron Bentley. I think he's been sent off, I think he's three times here. Jordan Kopp, who's really influential for us, lots of assists and goals, and he's missed games through sending off. Our discipline could be much, much better. And since November, if you'd spoke, we had this conversation, we're saying, oh, it's we're exceeding our expectations, what we wanted this year. But I think that the start that we made, I say up until the first four months of the season or so, the start we made, we perhaps set the bar even higher then. And since then, it's down. And I've no doubt at all that, I think we're in a, I think we're too good to be in a down in the bottom four. But how many teams have said that before, and the squad and the players we've got here. But we're in a bit of a relegation battle at the moment now. But where we are as a club from where we started, this is my, I came 2017-18. We've really, really, I won't say punched above our weight, but we've done superbly well from where we are in step six, where we were the season before I came, at the end of that season, it was third, fourth from the bottom. And the next season was the incentive, or the ambition was to finish in the top eight. And now we're playing step four football. And the ambition this year is to stay in the Southern League. It took us 3 years to get out of the South West Peninsula League. It took us 3 years to get out of the Toole Station Western League. So we ain't gonna we weren't you know gonna storm straight out of the Southern League, Division One. So it's all a big learning curve, and particularly the finance that is really, really we had to find. And so for the ground improvements themselves, which will make, even a lasting legacy for the club. The ground looks nothing like it did when I first came down into Cornwall back in the early 90s, and it was literally just a park pitch. And now it's with the floodlights and the huge big clubhouse, and it's yeah, it's exciting times, but it's hard on a non-league side like ourselves to find that finance to step up through the leagues, you know. So, but overall, it's probably, if they were doing the report, it was the season up to now, it would be a B plus, probably a B.
We'll come back. I mean, we'll come back to Hilton at the end of the chat. But I mean, if we sort of sort of go back and how did it all start for a young Steve? How did you get into this crazy world of football?
Oh, my dad, perfectly honest, he was a great influence on me. Staunch Man United fan, and I remember going to games as a youngster, 4 or 5 year old, taking me to games at Old Trafford. So I was into football from an early age. And I look back on football now and find that I hated school. I was really, really shy, unbelievably shy. But football, I found from an early age at 7, I was playing in what was the junior, I was junior one at age 7 then, and I was playing with the under 11s at junior four when I was 7. And football gave me that if you like a personality. It gave me the mask to wear where I was so really, really shy. And it gave me I'll say a purpose, but football always has been a way of giving me a confidence that I perhaps wouldn't, well, not perhaps, I didn't have in myself. And you know, even this, I remember in the school playgrounds where I would just be really shy and think, oh God, it's playtime. I'll go out and stand in the corner. And when they thought that oh, this young lass has got a bit of talent, and they used to pick the teams at break time, you know, it was like, we'll have Massey, we'll have Massey. And it did. It gave me a bit of a standing, if you like, with my peers and throughout my school career. That football was my go-to, my confidence boost. And that, yeah.
So, I mean, first team you played for, would have been the school team, or would that have been a team
Yeah,
out?
it was a school in Manchester. It was right on the border of Manchester and Stockport. It was called Aspinall. I'm saying I played there at 7. I remember wearing my dad's boots. I was picked out of the blue to play in a cup final, which was the under 11s at that time, and I was 7, and I remember my dad giving me his boots, and they were the ones where they literally had the little tacks, the nails, and they used to put in your studs to keep the wooden studs in. And I remember, and we won the finals. I remember getting my first medal at age 7 in a cup final, and I think that's where that buzz that you get for winning that just drives you on, and you'll know what I mean. You take so many days and games and even seasons sometimes of despair and despondency, and I think for that one little joy of like, yes, we've gone and win away from home, or we go and win a cup final, we win a semi-final and get to a final. And those are things that you're in football for, and you take a lot of the crap and the shit around it just for those moments. And I will always remember that moment as a 7 year old winning the cup final that day. Yeah.
Do you think that was what gave you the love for it and
Yeah, I'm sure.
goodies
Yes,
for it?
absolutely. But I tell you what, now just shooting ahead to what, 60 odd years on later, I do say, to many people now, that you mentioned about, did that give you the love of the game? It did. But I have to say now, what I watch on the telly, and they've gone watch it live, and I'm talking about the top of our game, the Premier League game and things on like that, it's not the game that I grew up to love. It certainly isn't. And I think there's a lot going where it's an improvement, particularly with, you know, on the science side of it, with the training methods and the GPSs that they wear, and the diet and the nutrition. That's wonderful, really has. But I don't know. Sometimes I look at these lads and think, really, really, is that, you know, is that really hurt you? God, you've gone down too easy. It used to be an art, And then I'm talking back in the 70s and 80s, it used to be an art to stay on your feet. You didn't go down. And, you know, particularly if you got a defender coming in and you went down, that was looked upon as, oh, he's a weakness. He's a weakness. You know, you got to show some strength. And even as it was then in those days, it was called the trainer. You know, it wasn't the physio coming on for you. Again, if you were down and injured, that was again a sign of a weakness that you had to have the trainer on for you. Whereas now, these days, it's just, and the game management. That's what really, really annoys me, and they call it game management and things, and it's cheating, to be perfectly honest. But that seems to be the modern game. But that early days of the cut and thrust of that football, and even playing on the muddy park pitches, and he's oh, it's only they say, oh, it's only the goal mouse that are flooded. Rest of the pitch is all right, and you go and play on it. You know, it was brilliant. Yeah.
So, how did it sort of come about then? And I mean, looking on here, I mean, Stockport County sort of first club. I mean, how did that all sort of come about, and what age was
Really,
it then?
yeah, really, really fortunate. Really, really fortunate. I was picked to play for Manchester Boys as a under 15s. I was 14, and they had a squad of 16, 18 players in the school, and all of them used to go en masse to train at United's old, oh, I forget, United's old training ground, and we used to go there on a Tuesday and Thursday night, and it was a trek because mum and dad didn't have a car, so it was a couple of buses. And yeah, I just thought you were a number there. They were there, must have been 50, 60 kids there. And I had an opportunity. I remember coming home from school day, I don't know, it was a Wednesday or Thursday, and my dad had come on home and said, Terry McCreary, who was the secretary at Stockport County, who my dad knew because he ran the local Sunday football leagues, and they used to play some of the finals at Stockport and things, and he was a friend of Terry, and Terry said, there's a trial at Stockport on Sunday, why don't you bring your Steve along? And he said he can come and have a look, he'll be one of the youngest there, but if he wants to come along, come along. So anyway, he said, do you want to go? So I said, yeah, all right. And so we went on the Sunday, but we got the time. And again, you think, wow, if that sort of lucky bit of luck, really, or that sliding doors, whatever you want to call it, at the time, because we got the dad got the time wrong, and we should have been there at 10 o'clock, for a half ten kickoff, but we didn't get there because we thought it was 10:30. So we were late getting there, and so when I went there, and the guy organised it, running, he said, oh, you're a midfielder, aren't you? So I said, yes, play in midfield. He said, ah. So he said, we've got the team sorted. I said, tell you what, can you play up front this half? Play up front, and then we'll look at you can go back midfield player in the second half. So have you played up front? I said, no, but he said, no, you'll be all right. So I thought, oh, okay. And I always remember my dad afterwards saying, where did that come from? Where did that performance come from? After the team I was playing for were about four or five up. I'd scored hat trick, but the big factor at that point is that watching then, just that first half was the first team coach, a guy called Jim Mulvaney, and he again you look back and you think, cool, what happens if he'd gone or whatever, or didn't even come to see the game, and he came over to dad and he said, is your boy available? Come train on Tuesday with the youth section, sort of thing, with it. So that's how I came to Stockport as a 14-year-old. 2 weeks later, I signed. They used to have then schoolboy forms, and I signed schoolboy forms for Stockport. And that was sort of, I was into, if you like, the production line there then, really. In with the program, I used to go and train with the first team. And again, that wouldn't happen now because you had to be 16 to go and train with the pros. I mean, I was 14 in the school holidays, 15, 14, 15. The school holidays, I went up training with the first team, and it was fantastic experience. Even changing the dressing room with them, you know, and then I was offered an apprenticeship when I was just leaving school. In fact, I remember coming home and said, "We've had." He was the youth team coach, a guy called Huey Ryden. Huey Ryden's been round here. He's seen us. He said, "We've had a good chat." What about? What about? I said, If we're prepared to let you leave school, they will offer you a 2-year apprenticeship at Stockport. And I said, what did you say? Yes. He says, yes, of course. Yeah. So I went into as an apprentice, and we did everything but play football, to be perfectly honest. We looked, there was the four of us. They didn't have a groundsman. We had the ground. We had to look after the ground, cut the pitch, mark the pitch, clean all the stands, do all the work around the ground and things. And in between time, we used to try and train or play some football. I managed to break into the first team at 16. I was sub that night in February. Scored on my debut as well, the winning goal against Darlington, and that was the start of the 16 years I spent in the pro game.
Well, funny enough, that was I literally just a few weeks ago with my brother went to City Leyton Orient play, and they were playing Stockport at the time, and Stockport won the game, but which was fantastic on that day.
My boy was there. My youngest, which I'm really proud to say, because I am a Stockport fan. I go anywhere in the world. And you start talking about football and things, and it always comes around to, well, who do you support? My hero while I was playing was Kenny Dalglish, and so I always had a soft spot and still have for Liverpool in the Premier League. But my team is Stockport County, yeah, that's where the sort of love that it was a Friday night county night that got me into it. Dad used to take me. And then Dad go and watch Man United, which was his team on the Saturday, but yeah, those are the days at Edgeley Park, and I was really, really proud to at that time. I still am the youngest to score for Stockport, and at that time I was the youngest player for a number of years to play for Stockport.
So
So yeah.
what was that like being told then that you was going to be, part of the first day,
Oh, it
team
was
match?
I honestly, you're asking me now, and it's just the hairs are just standing up, and it really just still send that feeling of, because I can remember it. And I turned up for, I'd been as kit boy. They used to take one of the apprentices on the long journey, and it was actually down to Exeter. And they said, for your reward for the, how well are you doing at playing in the reserve team? It was North West Floodlit League that he used to play in the reserve team. And he said, "Go and get some experience. Travel with the first team down to Exeter." And I was the kit. I was in charge of the kit. Those days you used to have the big wicker baskets that they had in there, and then the boot kit. And I was in charge of all that. So I'd had the taste of the first team. And then the month later, I came in for training on the Friday night. Jimmy Meadows, who was the manager then, he played for England and was in the England squad with the 66 World Cup around the England team. He said to me, go and get yourself home. You're in the 12 tonight. You're 12. I said, go and rest up at home. I want you back here for 6 o'clock." It was like, wow, unbelievable. In those days, the subs, you didn't make, because you just had one sub, they didn't make subs tactically. Because you thought, oh, if somebody gets injured or whatever. So really, the sub only came on if somebody got injured. So that was it. So I'm on the bench, and I'm thinking, if there was a once in the first half, Mickey Hollis, the centre forward, he went down injured, and I thought, I remember Jimmy Meadows telling me to go and get warmed up, but he recovered and fine. And anyway, there was about 15 minutes to go. And Mickey Hollis himself hadn't recovered really from that injury, so he came off. I went on, and it was about 10 minutes till the end. I managed to It was a super ball through, and I managed to outpace the centre half, held him off, and the keeper came, and I slotted it past him. There is a great picture of me jumping up and celebrating. I'm about 6 foot off the air. In there, it was a super, super night, and it was on my mum's birthday, so I'll never ever forget that. 28th of February.
Yeah, I mean that must be incredible, though, wasn't it? As you say, though, what was it like coming off, and was your parents there when to see it?
I mean, and my brothers, two brothers and a sister, and everybody was there. In those days in Stockport, there, I mean, they got they we did well to get 3,000 plus at those gates, so I think even just when we play making the debut that night, I think I must have put all 10, 12 people on the gates. I happened to score in the next home game as well against Bradford City. It was a bit of a gift goal. I chased a back pass in, and the defender hit the keeper's come out, and they sort of collided going. So I just walked the ball into the empty net. So I've got two in two. And then unfortunately, I think it's about two games later. We're into sort of March time, I think it was then, going into April. We played at Brentford, and I started in the team at Brentford. And after about 10 minutes, 15 minutes of the game, I fell heavily on my shoulder and dislocated my shoulder. So that was me out for the rest of the season. And that was, God, was that painful? Really, really was. So that was my first impression of Griffin Park playing at Brentford there. So I'd sort of burst onto the scene. And then spent the last month in a sling and getting myself ready for the following pre-season.
Was
So,
that difficult for you? I suppose as a young man, sort of like, you can see sort of like the glittering stars and all the rest of it, and then all of a sudden a freak injury like that sort of puts you out for.
it was really weird, to be perfectly honest, because honestly, I know it sounds daft, and particularly today's image and the image of the footballers at that time, I was just absolutely. It was my dream come true to be a professional footballer anyway, but playing for my team that I supported, and I naively, I mean, I'm 16, but I naively thinking, oh, I'm going to be here for Stockport for years, maybe. And there wasn't even any thought of, because Stockport always struggled in that fourth division, and there wasn't any thought of, oh yeah, maybe if we build a team for promotion. It was just, I suppose, selfishly really just focused on thinking, oh, I'm playing football for a living. I'm getting paid for it. My first pro cut that I was offered a 2 year contract at that time on 20. On, I was on £8 a week as an apprentice, £8 a week, and I went on to £25. Was my first professional contract a week. So, and then you hear all the rest of the lads saying, they get in appearance money, and they get a goal bonus, and there was the crowd bonus, anything over 4,000, they got a percentage of it and things. And as you get a little bit wiser and older, you learn a bit more. But at that time, I was just, yeah, anything, I'll pay you to be it was really just thought of, it wasn't anything thought about. Oh, I can get a move to somewhere. Oh, I wonder if any of the first division clubs would be interested. It was just thought, I'm playing for Stockport. I'm just playing for Stockport.
So, I mean, he made over 100 appearances for Stockport. I mean, what would you say was your most favourite moment? Was it that sort of the first couple of games, or was there something that you still sticks in your mind that
Oh yeah,
having that game?
without a doubt, that still. There'd be a couple of games. Of course, my debut would be always and is always special. But we had a game in the League Cup, and we played Blackburn Rovers away, and we were I mean they were top of what was the second division then, now the Championship. But they were talking about we were struggling in the fourth division. This early season of September. This is the following season now. I've recovered from my dislocated shoulder, and we beat Blackburn 3-1 at Blackburn, and I score two, and one is a header, which is really rare for me. My first goal, I curled it in from the edge of the box, and I just ended with my left foot, and it was one of the best goals I think I'd scored for Stoke, one of the best goals of my career. It's good, but that sort of elevated the team and things and whatnot, and including myself, and that was a real special night. But the first big occasion we had, because we beat Blackburn then, we drew Everton at home, and
No,
they were all the big lads. I remember Dave Jones, who later went on to manage Stockport. He was playing at centre half, I think he was that night. But that was my first time that I thought I'd sampled an atmosphere that was like, wow, this is for me. I want more of this. And it was the first time that I ever come into any sort of game management, because we were all ready to go out, and we lined in Edgeley Park with the tunnel down there. We'd come out of the dressing room to go down the tunnel, and the manager at the time, a guy called Eddie Quigley, and he runs up to the front. He said, no, stop there, wait there, wait there. And so we're all stood waiting. They said, I want Everton to go out first. Everton to go out first. In those days, of course, you didn't go out, walk out together. So Everton come out of the away dressing room, and now you see these big lads, and you know them all. And they went out. I said, now I want them to hear the roar, the noise that the fans are going to make now as they go out. And you thought, oh, fair play. So that, and then I remember quite clearly that was the first real mark for me about, if you like, game management, or the psychology in the football, you know. I remember running out, and the roar of that. It was a packed house, about 15,000 there that night, you know. Unfortunately, we lost 1-0 to a scrappy goal. It was an own goal by the keeper, to be perfectly honest. But we nearly took them back for a replay.
It'd be
But
a nice day
that
for
stands out very much in
them.
Stockport.
So I mean, with the Stockport run, I mean, in 1978, you move on to Bournemouth. That's a bit of a travel from a bit of a
Yeah,
distance.
it was. It really was. And again, that come out of the blue. Mike Summerby had taken over now as manager. We used to have two managers a year at Stockport. I was thinking, is it me, or what happens? This is what happens. You have two managers a year at Stockport, you know. Either they resign or they got sacked. And Mike Summerby was in charge, took over towards the end of the season, and was that when we were in the pre-season. And I remember, which a lot of the lads used to do then at that time, they'll take, because you used to have a long pre-season, a close season, and you'd have maybe even 2 months off. So a lot of the lads would go and have a second job. And because I was just really wiry, I really was, I was 9 stone wet through. And I had one or two of the lads are doing it, and remember the coach saying, go and get yourself on a building site, you know, the hod carrying and moving the ring. So I did. A family friend of ours had a building company, and I was working on this building site in Stockport, hod carrying. And when I in those days, again, no mobile phones, of course. You're talking about, this is what, 77 78. And I get a message there to say, John Benson, who was a Bournemouth manager, is coming up to Stockport, and he'll be here. This was the morning. He said he'll be here this afternoon, and he wants to meet you at the ground. So I, yeah, what's that? What, Bournemouth? What, like? And I go over across to the ground. I get a lift because I'm not driving. I've got a car then at that time. So I get across the ground, and I see the secretary, and they said, we've agreed a fee for you, which was, I think it was £10,000 at that time. And they said, if you agree terms, then I think it'd be a great move for you. And I'm thinking, Bournemouth, shit, that's fucking miles away. Miles, gee whiz. I mean, how's my dad going to get there and watch me? Because my dad watches every game of the day. And so anyway, going, I told John many, unfortunately, God rest his soul now. I mean, he passed away a number of years ago, John did now. But he was a Reddish lad. He was a Reddish lad like myself, Stockport lad. And I always remember him saying, I come out of government here. And it's the first time I ever heard the terminology of Southern softy. I never even heard it before. And he said, I prefer the Northern boys up here. He said, those Southern lads, Southern softies. He said, I want the lads going into a Rochdale on a Wednesday night. He said, I like the Northern lads. He said, I'll come up here for the Northern lads. And I mean, he signed about half a dozen that year anyway from Barnsley. It was Kenny Brown, Mickey Butler, signed from that, and it, that we all came down into Bournemouth. But I always remember saying to him, because I remember asking Terry McCrew, the secretary, what should I ask? What should I'm on £25 a week there at that time. He said, what should, yes, support, if you can get 40, £50 out a week, you know. And then you hear people signing on fees. What you need? So, well, a couple of hundred, maybe, you know, if you feel strong enough, £400, £500 for coming. So, and oh, okay. So I go into the meeting, and John's talking about that. And it's the first time, again, the first time I think I mentioned earlier, just saying about Stockport, you should just survive. There was never a talk of promotion or a challenge. That's the first time I heard I heard anybody say, "I want to put a side together because we want to get promoted. We want to be at the top of the." And you thought, "Oh, okay, yeah, this is a bit of an ambitious club." And I always remembered John, and I did say to him many times after, if he'd let me say, "What would you like?" he would have saved himself hundreds of pounds because he said, "I suppose you're wanting now to know what the terms would be." So I said, "Well," he said, "tell you what I'll do. It's a 2-year contract, £80 a week, and £2,000 each year." And I went, "Oh." And I was thinking, if he had let me said, "Well, £50." But it's like, again, it's like I said earlier, as you get a bit older and a bit wiser, you come into the dressing room then at Bournemouth, and there's some good experienced pros, and they played like with your Brian Chambers, I think I remember playing at Millwall, midfield playing, and you listen to them. Ted McDougall, the actual god of Bournemouth, you know, the name to stand after him now. He comes back for his last spell at Bournemouth during my time in there, and you listen to the dressing room and you think, bloody hell. The boys are on a lot more than me, like you know. You think, but that's how you were. You thought, wow, I'll take that, I'll take that. But I remember at the time, the first few months, I was really homesick, absolutely homesick. I used to try and get home every weekend on the train from Bournemouth. It was a match at home. Jump on the train, change at London, back out of Euston, arrive at like 12 o'clock at night, and then have to come back. 3 o'clock, 2 or 3 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon. But I did that for a number of weeks till the homesickness just disappeared. When? And then you think, yeah, I've grown up now. I'm grown up. And that part, I look and think, that was my period of 3 years at Bournemouth where I'd like to think I did that. I turned from a boy into a man during those 3 years. Yeah.
Almost 100 appearances for them as well.
Yeah.
Well,
Yeah.
you know, I mean, again, what favourite game you had there?
It was early on in the season against Portsmouth, big local derby, and we actually won. It was a Friday night, so there was a lot more people there as well. We won 3-1, which was actually quite a bit of a shock. Portsmouth were one of the favourites to go, particularly with their huge support that they had, and we won 3-1 that night, and I scored one of my better goals there as well, and that just for the atmosphere there that night was wonderful. It was, but I remember going to Tranmere Rovers on a Friday night again, and everything just went right. There was my centre forward at the time alongside me was a guy called Mickey Butler who played at Barnsley, I think Doncaster as well. I think he was in there, and he was a journeyman like myself in the lower division, scored plenty of goals, and we just hit it off that night, and we absolutely walloped them 5-0 away from home that night. So that was always a good night in there. Yeah, it was just the experience of being alongside Brian, which was one of my idols, particularly as a centre forward, Ted McDougall himself, he came back in the October time. But I did think, and I have said it in the book. I was fortunate to be able to write an autobiography, and that was done. And I do say in the book that Ted has, not that he said anything or treated me badly, but he wasn't so good around the young lads, and some of the young lads suffered with his personality that he demanded, and he would take over the dressing room at half time and team talks. But you know, to actually play alongside and seeing what a football goal scorer he was himself in there. And I actually had to room with him on his first game back. We were, I think it was away at Hartlepool, and we were an overnight stay, as most of our games were away from home. And I was put, and John Benson had said to me, "You'll learn a lot from Ted. I want you and Ted, when you saw, you'll be rooming with him." So all the lads started taking the mickey, because of course you got an old experienced pro here now in Ted, and he's, "Oh, that's worse. He treats you. You'll be just a, you'll be a slave. It'll be, you've got to make the tea. You haven't got any." He's shocking to room with. So the piling me up during the meal and gone, and then Ted's gone. He's gone up to, this is only about 8 o'clock now. And he said, "Oh, you better You better go. And Ted's already in the room. He's going to be, you wake him up, he's going to be really, really angry. So I go back up to the room and it's locked. So I go downstairs to get the reception and I'm now terrified. And Toby, like, oh, shit. He's going to be asleep. I've been told this is his routine. You don't disturb him, like, you know. So the guy's opening up the door and I'm going in. It's now in total darkness and I'm now trying to get undressed, taking the entrance gear. And all of a sudden, I heard Ted said, "You might as well turn the lights on. You're woken me up now. Get into bed." And I thought, "Gee, that's a great, great start." But that was just Ted's demeanor. He was an absolute winner. He was a winner. But and that was his last season. He had it at Bournemouth as well, and he retired. But that's always fun. Well. Yeah, I would just remember being absolutely scared to death, like, of rooming with this guy. I think I slept with one eye open that night anyway, all the way through. Just in case he wanted anything, get me a cup of tea or something, you know.
But when your time at Bournemouth finished, I mean, you started heading north a little bit. I mean, back up to sort of Peterborough United for a short period of time.
It was a real shock. I think I finished second, leading second. Either joint or second leading goal scorer. I think I had about 12 that season, and I'd missed quite a few games because I had first of one or two knee niggles and troubles. And I remember having an operation that seemed when I was out for a good, I don't know, month, 6 weeks. So I thought I did well, and everybody, and it was a complete shock. David Webb has now taken the old Chelsea centre half has now taken over as manager, and we'd had that season with him. And he was ruthless. He really was. And his management style was basically bullying, and he just bullied you into it. Like, you know, he'd get the lads up against the wall and don't shout back at me and things like that. And then his way he wanted to play was 4-4-2, and he had the two down, Trevor Morgan, Dean Mooney, and we actually played three up front that season, and we did really well between the three of us, and they called us the M squad. So I was seriously, I was utterly devastated when David Webb calls me and he said, "We're gonna let you go." I was expecting to have another year on my contract again, and I said, "I've been there 3 years. I'd loved it. It was as I considered a firm favourite with the fans." And he said, "We're not going to play. It's not yours," which it wasn't, to be fair. It wasn't my style of play. I was like a Dalglish. He wanted two big giants right at the top. And he said, "We're going to," he narrowed the pitch. He brought the pitch in as well. And he said, "We're just going to bombard the into the front line." He said, in view of what you've done for us and your play, he said, "You'll have no trouble picking up a club. I'm going to get you. You can go on a free." So I was gutted, absolutely gutted. And for the first time, I had about 7 years now in the brain, I thought, blimey, it can just finish like that, you know. And I actually signed or agreed to go over to Hong Kong with a couple of agents that was from West Brom, and one from West Brom, one was from Coventry. And I'd been up to meet them, and I was going to go out and play for Happy Valley in Hong Kong for it was a 10-month contract that then rolled on again with a 2-month break, but then rolled on again for 10. But the money. And it was a bit like the American scene at that time. Then the money, some of the players went out to Hong Kong just for the money. It was crazy, and I'd have thought, oh, I'll do that. I'll do that. Yeah, because I was really, really, I was really gutted. It really did hurt me. So to keep myself, I went up to Peterborough to train because the coach from Bournemouth had moved to Peterborough as assistant manager and said, "You can come and train. Come and train me as well while you go out there then." So I did the pre-season there, and I've been there 2 or 3 weeks, played in a couple of like close behind the scenes games and things, practice matches. And Peter Morris, who was the manager, said, "You don't want to, you don't what, stay here. We'll give you a contract. You don't want to go out to Hong Kong, you know." And my dad was a big, big influence because he was gutted. I can't go out to Hong Kong. And he'd never flown in his life, so that was just like, you know, they'd never. So, and it cut long story short, I accepted the contract that Peterborough offered me, and I played in that side until transfer deadline day. I ended up moving to Northampton Town. But the my days at Days at Peterborough, it was short, but I played with some really good players, and Billy Kellogg and Trevor Quone, Colin Clark, who went on to play something for the Northern Ireland side. Appearances, made many appearances for them. But it wasn't a good time in my I was played out wide right, in a successful team, and or the team should have got promotion that year. But he needed somebody off the wage bill, as he wanted to bring in a centre half, I think, at the time. And I was one of a couple that he thought, oh, he could get some money or trying to move on. And he said they'd agreed a fee with Wimbledon, and right on the and that was when the crazy gang time. And I went up there for 2 days just before transfer deadline with Dave Bassett, and spent 2 days with him up there. But I don't know. I go back early on, right from the start. I was a real shy guy. It was only the football that had given me that confidence, that persona. And I thought, there's some huge big characters in that Wimbledon dressing room and curtain. And I just thought, honestly, I felt totally overwhelmed. It was like, whew, what's going on here? And it was, and then I thought, do I really? And I maybe wrongly or rightly, I decided it perhaps wasn't the place for me to be going. I remember phoning, as you did then in old days, phoning from a phone box just outside the ground at Peterborough. And Peter, I come back to Peter Morris, and he said, "So, yeah, are you going?" I said, "No, I don't think it's for me." And I remember he went absolutely potty, as the manager did. I mean, there was no agents in those days, and the clubs just had you really tightly. And he said, "You're not going? That's going to scupper my deal." I said, "Well, I've got to do what I feel's right for me." He said, "And your life is going to be hell. You're going to be training morning, noon, and night. You're not going to train with the first team. You'll be training with the youngsters that'll make your life hell." And he said, "You're in the reserve tomorrow." Now there's literally not 24 hours before the deadline day. "You're in the reserves tomorrow. You're in the reserves tomorrow, going down to Southend." So I go down the Southend, get on the coach, and I arrive at Southend. And one of their admin people come into the dressing room. "Is there a Steve Massey here?" So I go, yeah. He said, "You got my phone Peter, phone your manager, Peter Morris, back at the club." So I go into their office with phone. He said, "I've arranged for you. We've sorted a fee out for Northampton Town. Clive Walker will meet you off the coach when you get back from Peterborough. You don't play today. You'll be meeting then." He said, "And you better sign. You better sign." He said to me. So, oh, shit, all right. So I've gone all the way to Southend, not played, gone all the way back, met Clive Walker. He's met me. And straight away, you think, I love this guy. Great. You know, sometimes you just get a connection. And of course, it was the where I hadn't at Peter, but Peter Morris was a real dour, a dour. I mean, good tactician, but he was a dour. He didn't, his management skills wasn't really great. And I was the one that if you put my arm around him, as Clive did, and he'll say to me, "We need you. We can survive," because they were down near the bottom four at that time. He said, "We need you. We need somebody like you. Come on and spur us." And I felt 10 foot tall. And I had a fantastic time at Northampton. So I went and I said, "Yeah, I'm going to sign for Northampton." So that was right on transfer deadline day. And I had probably my best spell in the game, personally, at Northampton Town. And that was purely because I think just how Clive treated me and responded to you know about it. And I was the league leading goal scorer that year in the fourth division. And then we had some great times there. I loved it there at Northampton.
And from Northampton, you started travelling up again, up to Hull.
That was a turn. I had a number of clubs come in, because I say I'd scoring goals. We had that, which is still talked about now by the Cobblers fans, of the magnificent game against Aston Villa, which was broadcast on Match of the Day, as they used to have the one game. That was the game they had on Match of the Day, with the Aston Villa side that had just won the European Cup the year before. So they had all their stalwarts in there, all the guys down there, Gary Shaw and what's it? Evans, Alan Evans, and things. Mortimer was playing, and that was a great occasion. I hit the post that day as well, and we lost 1-0 to actually a goal of the season, Mark Walters. But he does a little drag back and turn around, and he leaves the centre half just standing, and he tucks it in. And that one goal of the season. But we were beaten 1-0 that day. Yeah. But the whole city there, I'd say a number of clubs, and but I'd, Hull City was were a real club that was that as them were proved. I mean, they got into the championship eventually 2 or 3 seasons later as well. That they were really ambitious. I could have gone and was offered more money at Swindon Town offered me something, but I just thought Hull City would be another development for my game and to be part of a promotion. I now wanted, from where I started off at Stockport, it was just like, oh, it's just pure pleasure to play for my hometown. And now you're thinking, actually, I want to be in the winning side, and you want to go and win something, do something yourself. And so that was again with Hull City, and what a side we had there. I mean, we had in the middle of the park there, the guy that goes on to get the top job in English football, Steve McClaren. And you would never have guessed. It, Sid was his nickname. And he was the social secretary. And that was the only time I'd gone to a football club where you trained in the afternoon. And it was like, what? We don't train in the afternoon. We train in the afternoon, you know. Colin Appleton used to come back on the train. And Steve McGowan would, he'd be the biggest moaner to say, oh, not we're doing, oh, no, we're not going to come back. I mean, and then if you said to me who was the least likeliest in that group of players that were in there, we had Brian Marwood, who goes on to play for your side, Arsenal, a fantastic winger. We had a real good side, that Tony Norman, the Welsh keeper in there. If you'd asked me who would go on, you know, to make a manager or a coach, Steve McClaren would have been the last one I would have said. And it was weird. And so, I remember one we were at some I met one or two of the lads at a game somewhere after a finish. And then and they said, Sid's gone to like Steve McClaren. He's gone to, I think it was Bristol, one of the Bristol clubs first as a coach. Then he went to Derby, and of course, then he ends up with Man United, and then he ends up the big job, the main job, you know. You think, wow, I've done well, unbelievably well for yourself, you know. But yeah, he was in that side, and we had Colin Appleton, who was the manager, who was probably my most eccentric manager I played under. We used to call him the Mad Professor. He had his hair would all about, and he'd go on and he'd make these analogies all the time about what happens if this is there, what happens if they're there, and he used to leave us going, I haven't a clue what he's talking about, you know. But he just missed out on we just missed out on promotion. We had to go to Burnley and win by two by like, was it 2 or 3 goals? And anyway, we lost a goal short. In those days, it was done by the old method with the goals for and against, and it was divided, not like the goal difference now. And we missed out by literally one goal. Last game of the season, we had to go and win. I think it was we had to win by three clear goals, and we beat Burnley 3-1, I think it was, and we failed by one goal. And Brian Horton came in the next season. Brian Horton, the old Brighton gaffer, and he got us promotion. We got promotion that year. And I again another learning progress, which I take into my and I have taken into my management, and about team and team battle. It's not Hull City, and Brian Horton taught me really about the teamwork and being part of a team and being part of a squad rather than just the one individual. And I was very selfish that I'm a forward. I want to, and he said, no, I want you to play as a 4-3-3. You're playing wide and three out of possession, 4-5-1. And that's how we played it. And this is your role on the right hand side, and you're in the team. And I stupidly, anyway, they paid money for me. They went to a tribunal, they paid money. I say, I scored goals. I was leading goal scorer last year. You know, I scored. I want to play down the middle. He said, if you're not going to play down the middle, you'll sit in the stand. So of course I go, I'll sit in the stand. And I'm sat in the stand for I don't know, a month or so now. And I'm thinking, actually, who's the loser here? You know, the lads are still doing well. And so it was a big lesson in trying to say, you're part of a squad. And whichever way the manager wants to go, that's where you go and fit in and things. And it may be not that where you go or do want to go and play or think you're playing, but to be part of a team and a squad is so much more important, you know, than just selfishly, oh, I want to be up front and score goals, you know. So that was, yeah, and we got promotion that year. And then a real weird one happened, really. I moved back south again.
Yeah, I mean, you moved to Cambridge and then down to Wrexham, and I mean, of course, Wrexham now probably one of the biggest clubs in the country now.
Oh, honestly, I had the like I did it at Stockport, Northampton Town, Wrexham, and in particular was super when I went and launched my books. I went at the ground, the home grounds there, and that was 2 seasons ago now. And you just knew it just it was just the buzz around the place, and you just think they're just going to storm it. Honestly, I think they're just going to storm into the championship. I really, really do. There are a lot of decent teams in that championship, big clubs in that championship, that will really test their ambition if they really wanted to go then. But certainly, I just keep saying to all the guys, I've got many, many friends and they keep in contact with. I'm invited back each year. That what a time, what a magnificent time to be a Wrexham fan. Really, really is, you know.
But why he was there? 1986, 87 European Cup Winners' Cup.
Yes, yeah.
Scored three in a 7-0 victory over, I can't even say the name. Is it Zurich or something like that?
Yeah,
So
Zurich, yes, yeah.
in
Also, yeah.
September, and in October, another two in a 2-2 draw against Real Zaragoza.
Yeah, that, and again, you just think, okay, I shouldn't have left Hull. I should never have left Hull. There was two, seriously, if you look back on the on that particular era, and you divide and you've looked at the teams that were on the up, and teams that were on the down, I think it was one of the top two or three sides that had been points gained over the last 2 3 years. Was Hull City. They'd moved out of the fourth and third division into the second division there. And the other side, one of the poorest teams, if not the poorest, that had gone down consecutive relegations, was Cambridge. And I moved from one of the top sides at that time, Hull City, to Cambridge. And I have to say, it was the only time in the whole of my career, in the moves, I had seven moves in all, that it was just the lure of the money. And it was just like, wow, Cambridge had gone down consecutive seasons, relegations from the second division, third foot into the fourth, and they wanted to get straight back out. And they put some big money transfer fees and wages into five or six of us that they thought these are the players that can do it. And it was a disaster. It's not a footballing place anyway. Although the other thing, the point I'm going to make is that if I didn't do that move, I wouldn't have perhaps got to the chance to go and then play for Wrexham, because I was of the five players that they'd signed for transfer fees, put on big wages, I was the last one left. And I still had another year to go on the contract. And they said, Dixon McNeil's coming for you from Wrexham. He said, in lieu of the position that the club are in now, he said, we're not asking a fee. So if you can sort out your terms. I remember going up to Wrexham and speaking to Dixon McNeil. I went up with my wife and my boy then. He's Ben's, my first boy, is about 2 years. Yeah, two years old then. And I always remember he saw us back out of the car. We'd only chatted and he said, have a think about it. Because it's near, and it was nearer my home then as well, Stockport. And I thought, yeah, I could see more of mum and dad, more of the family. They could see more of the grandson and things. And I'd sort of really made up my mind anyways, but he's come out into the car, he's walked us out, I've got into my car, and he's talking through the window. And I kid you not, the biggest dollop of bird shit hits him on the head. And honestly, you couldn't make it up. And it's gone splat. And I always remember Gail, my wife, sat next to me and said, Jesus, you've got a sign for him now. If that's not an omen, if that's not an omen. And we joined, I saw Dixie last year, he's president at Wrexham now. And I went up there last year. And of course, we got chatting. And I do remind him each time, he said, about that. Seriously, you couldn't have made it up. It just went splatter on his head. And said, oh, I've got to come here. That's got to be muck for luck in there. And those European nights are one of, if not probably my best moments in football. And I'm still proud today. And it was nice. And it was only when they introduced, it was Paul Jones, who was the ex chairman during the troubled times in the 90s and things. He's now like he's a guest, and he looks after the ex players, and he introduces in turn, and he holds a question and answer session and things. And they've got some magnificent hospitality boxes there now, and he's got seven or eight of them. and they all got 12, 15 people in there, guests in there for each company that takes one. And he introduced me in the box, and it was like, wow, yeah, really. He said, this is Steve Massey. He's our leading goal scorer in Europe. And it was like, wow, yeah, and I am absolutely proud of that fact. And a bit like they all do, they go, how many did you get? How many, I'd expect. I always go very quietly, four. I got four, but it's still there. So, and like a lot of them said, how many, will that record be beaten? I hope so. It means that they'll be going to it. Will I see it in my lifetime? I don't know, but it'd be nice for it to have it beaten, because they know they'll be back in Europe and playing again and things. So, but that yeah, that is a real, real proud moment. And that was, and that Zaragoza night, when I mean they had at that time, they were the big spenders, particularly the Spanish league in that time, and they had a 1.2 million pound player, which was like unheard of. I think it was who comes off the bench and scores their two goals, and they were just like the big kings. We weren't even given a chance. I mean, we went to Zaragoza and drew nil-nil out there the first leg, which was just unbelievable. And the atmosphere and things, and we were treated like, we kept saying, do they know we're Wrexham? Did they think we're Liverpool or something, like, because we had the outriders to take us to the training ground. We had more watching us train than we did at our home games. It was about 4,000 or 5,000 watching us train. But it was a magnificent experience, and something I am very, very thankful of, that I managed to do that. Yeah.
So, I mean, as the plane, Chris, sort of started to wean down a bit, you went off to Truro.
Yes. Yeah. That came about when my in-laws, who were in the holiday park industry anyway, had an opportunity to buy a holiday park down in Cornwall called Mullion Holiday Park. And so they had one or two issues. And as they opened in the April, I'm still playing at Wrexham. So a mum and dad said to look, we need, because Gail at that time was a bit of an entrepreneur, a sister, as you very well know, but a sister, and this is what the line she comes from. A sister's Deborah Meaden. Deborah Meaden was my sister-in-law for well, 30-odd years. So Gail had a flair, particularly retail and things. And then mum and dad said, can you come down, just kick some backsides, sort one or two people out, and just put it on the right track. So Gail goes down, and so I'm now left in Wrexham with Ben, and Gail's going down there for a month. It's just going to be a month, but it ends up a lifetime then, 20-odd years in the holiday park. Because Gail, I remember Gail phoning me and said, I think I found my forte. This is it. I love it. And I'm at that stage thinking, I'm what, 31, 32 then at that time. And I'm thinking, yeah, do I stay here at Wrexham? Do I stop Port wanting me to go back in there? Or do we make a new life? Do we make a new life now? And so I took the big plunge, which was really, really scary and risky. I drove, and particularly remember the first time I did it, I drove all the way from Wrexham to Mullion, and even the A30 is nowhere near, it was nowhere near as jeweled as it is now. And it's just like, Jesus, this is another end of the world. Who comes down here? Comes down on holiday. What, you've got to be crazy to come all the way down here, and that was always our thought that we had to be, and we'd like we had five holiday parks in the end, and we just thought that all of them had to be a little bit special, because you've got to drive past so many good holiday parks to get to ours. So it's, that was my introduction. My love affair for football in Cornwall started there when I played at Truro City.
I mean, the playing careers then came to an end, and went into the crazy world of management.
Oh, I know, and the enthusiasm I had for it and things, and I remember using quotes from managers that I had before. I remember Dave Webb, you used to, he said, I want the three, I want the two E's, or you get the big E. You want effort and enthusiasm, or you get the elbow. And I remember quoting that, and the Cornish people, and it was, I am a bit like Marmite down here in Cornwall, because you it was either, who's this guy coming out of the pool? Who does he think he is? And I remember that was where the title of my autobiography comes from my first ever experience of being in a non-league dressing room in Truro. And my book's called Where's My Towel? Because I naively and ignorantly arrive at the ground for my first game, and I ask where the jock straps were to start with, and you bring your own, mate. You bring your own here. And I remember coming after the game, going into the shower, and coming out, and I'm stood now in the middle of the room, and I'm where's the towels? Where's the towels? And of course, there was two or three thrown at me. You big timer, who do you think you are? That was the introduction to non-league football in Truro and Cornwall.
I mean, you bounced in. You've been manager there at Truro, Falmouth, then Truro again, Buckland Athletic, Bovey Tracy. That's a
Yeah,
lovely.
Bobby Trade was
That's a
a
lovely
short
name.
short spell. Yeah, a very short spell there. It was only like an advisor really there. And it was we they wanted to stay up, and which we did. And he said, can you just make sure they'd been promoted the following year into the senior division, if you like, and they didn't want to go down again. And we managed to I was there for the last couple of months of the season. To we finished about seventh or eighth from the bottom in that then. Yeah,
Then
so.
back into Truro City again, and
Yeah.
then where, of course, where you are now, Helston. But when you was at Truro as your manager in did you ever come across I don't know, the first name's going to bug me now, and I'm going to get told off for it. I know I am when I get told later. But Thorogood,
No.
I was manager there. I know he was manager at Truro at one stage, and his name's going to bug me now because we're going out with his sister tonight for a meal. So.
All right. All right. Well, I'm
Oh,
trying
no,
to do this,
I'll get
but
Aaron for it later. But yeah.
yeah, and going back, John Askey's in charge now, and Wilkinson was in charge for Paul Watton, who's in charge at Torquay United now, was also there. And I think there was Dave Leonard that followed me at Truro, Steve Tully. Who was the guy that played at Yeovil? Cool, can't think of his name either now. No, Thug, is that his surname then? Yeah.
And it's gonna bug me now, and I know
Right.
it's gonna bug me
Right.
until I find out what
Yeah.
where you
Yeah.
were. But anyway, I'll find out and we'll let you
Yeah.
know as soon as I know. But
Yeah.
when you go to Helston, I mean there now, I mean what division were Helston in when you arrived as manager?
Well, that's again, we started chatting about where Helston are, and where we are, and what the season's about, and maybe we've exceeded our expectation this year, but we're in step four of the club itself, Helston, of which I used to pass, and that's why I had a soft spot. When my brother, who I brought down, my brother lives in Helston, who I brought down in the mid 90s, we brought down to be general manager at Mullin Holiday Park. That's how he came into Cornwall. So he's in there, and he's got a big, massy clan down there now, in the Cornish clan down there. And he had said to me, he had said it, the Helston job was Helston jobs available. The chairman wants speech. He said, should we do it, the two of us? And it had always been a soft spot because I'd driven past the ground as I used to drive into Truro. I got from Mullion, used to have to drive past the ground, and it was a park pitch, and I'd seen it literally grow up from just grow from they used to put a rope around the pitch into this field, whereas now it's all enclosed, and the floodlights, and it's a proper ground now. So I always had a soft spot, but they've only been in senior football in the pyramid section the last 12 years. That's all they've been. Of course, they've been going for over 120 odd years, but always junior football. And they with the chairman that's here now, a gentleman called Paul Hendy, who's brilliant, and I have to say one of the best, if not the best, I've worked with. He's been really, really ambitious with the club and driven it. That's how I came to even speak to Helston at that time. But they'd had a few issues a season before with not being able to field a team, particularly at that level, which was just, okay, you do it once, but to do it twice like they did was just unheard of. So they had to move the manager on, and it took me a couple of years. Stuart, my brother and I, and we thought it was something that was going to think, yeah, we'll have a bit of fun here. Three Let's see what happens. See how far we can go. I mean, 3 years. Well, I'm still here, and it's now into my, I think it's my, well, 2017, 18 has started. It's probably the seventh, eighth season I've been here now, and we've made great progress.
So
Great
have you
progress.
changed into manager? I mean, what's your position at Helston now?
I was manager there for the first 4 years, and take them into the Western League, and then I, which was my original role when I first came down, I could see the potential of the whole place, and I said, I tell you what, I won't be manager. I said, I'll be director of football. Let me, you look after everything off the pitch, and I and the youth section. They've got 20 odd youth set teams in the in the youth league, and the whole setup. And they got a wonderful. When you come down, you'll see wonderful picture. We've got six, seven pitches all at the back, which is at which is our land that the youth play on. And I just thought they had four senior teams, and I just thought, wow, the potential that's here. I'll be director of football, but and I'll put a manager in. So I put a manager in to start in, and the a guy called Steve Jewell, who's a local Cornish guy, and had been successful in local non-junior football things. So it was a big break for him as well. But he decided that perhaps he couldn't do manage. No, I can't do it. So it was a last minute thing. And Brother Stu said to me, "Go on, you do it yourself then. Go on, you do it yourself." So the old ego kicked in again as well, and he thought, yeah, I'll do it. I'll do it. Yeah. So that's how I became manager. So I've stepped. Then since Matty Cusack's been in now, which is his third season here with us now, he's done ever so well, really well. Great young coach, and I just stepped back to the role where I originally came into, which was director of football, and I try and oversee although the youth is run independently, we try and keep you get as close to the senior teams as possible, and we're big on youth, and we were the first. Helston was the first team in over 60 years to enter the FA Youth Cup, and again, that's Cornwall has really been backward in pushing themselves all out there about the talent that's down here, potential that's down here, and things like that. Just summed it up. Nobody entered the FA Vars until Truro City did, and we said, why not? We can win a bit of luck. We can go, and of course they go and win. And was proud to be involved in that when they go and win the FA Vars. But they don't really believe in. So I'll see what potential they could have down here. And we just tried to follow that, particularly with the youth side of it. And so we won five games. To eventually we got walloped at Forest Green, but they were, I mean, they had a team full of young pros in their side, and we got walloped 5-0 that night. But we'd won five games en route to the highest, and was it was still Helston. I think it's still the highest level of, or the lowest level of the side that has reached the first round proper, and we've been very, very proud of that. And a lot of those boys are making the way into the first team now. We're proud of that, with based on the youth side, but the control of the first team is under the guidance of Matt Cusack now.
Well, that name I was trying to think of, someone's texted it to me from upstairs, Lee Hodges, because it's a.
Oh, Hodge, yeah. They are, yes. Oh, absolutely. Well, I came in my second. Was it my third spell? Because I had three spells. My third spell. It was my third spell under Peter Murray, Peter Masters, the ex chairman. I came in as director of football, and so Odgy and I run the set to the end of that season, and then he resigned at end of that season. Peter wasn't too keen on it, to be perfectly honest, but he moved him on, and written it. I think it was a mutual one of these mutual consents, and moved him on there. But he had a good success there. So yes, yeah.
Well, This time's flown by, so I could sit here all night
No.
talking to you. I mean, honestly, it's been absolutely fantastic. But we wish you, we wish Helston all the very, very best for the future. Hopefully, I'm going to get down to see a game if we
That'd be
get
great to say,
one.
yeah,
And
that'd
if not,
be
I'll pop down and maybe have a chat anyway at some point during the time there.
Well, I mean, I live in Truro, so that's the focus. All roads lead to Truro. It's the only city in Cornwall, and so I've no doubt I'll talk to you down here. We'll have a coffee or
Yeah,
whatever.
we'll do. Well, listen, massive thank you, Steve. And from everybody else, a massive thank you for watching. And we'll be back with another episode of My Life in Football very, very shortly as I disappear off the screen. But we'll be back with another one very, very, very shortly. And from me and from Steve, good night.